As a result, Visa's unlawful conduct affects not just the price of one thing, but the price of nearly everything. Close quote. For WPFW News in Washington, I'm Sue Goodwin.
Good afternoon. This is the Shai Rana Show with your host, Zain Al-Amin. This is a show that focuses on Arab culture and politics, and it airs every Wednesday for 1 hour at WPFWFM.org and WBAI-FM. Good afternoon, everybody. This is Zain Lamin with the Shai Rana Show. And today we're really talking about Lebanon, of course, because as most of you know, who are paying attention, Israel has decided to attack yet another neighbor, thinking that in the long run, they'll be able to exist amidst all these enemies that are going to seek revenge for the massacres that they're committing. And these are massacres that obviously, just as in Gaza, they are targeted towards civilians because Dr. Finkelstein mentioned, he says that the Israelis are really good about killing children, really good with that. They're masters of massacring civilians, innocent civilians, and claiming that they harbor missiles and guns and underground tunnels. And the reality is just the same thing that they did in Gaza, where they had these AI-generated 3D models showing that under, for example, Al Shifa Hospital, there's a tunnel and a Hamas headquarters, which is many people have made many funny memes about it because, you know, the tunnels over there are over 500 kilometers in length. There's no reason to have them under a hospital and cause havoc. They're doing the same thing in Lebanon, where they're showing 3D AI models of, you know, you don't know whether to laugh or cry because it's so obvious that this is not for Arab consumption or for the consumption of people that are, or people of conscience. It's obviously for the consumption of our representatives who, with the exception to two or three people, including like Rashida Tlaib, that the rest of them are the most depraved set of representatives I've ever seen. The calls for violence and the murder of civilians that's couched in language of anti-terrorism has been just unbelievable. I knew our representatives never represented us, and I knew what they're capable of just for the sake of the dollar and their power and their place in Congress and Senate. But I never knew that they would talk openly about wiping out whole people. This is ripe for revolution, and that's why Gaza is the litmus test for global justice right now. And we saw that with the welding of the fight against police cop city and the death penalty recently with the Palestinian issue with Gaza. Now back to Lebanon. So they, you know, it was a bloody and destructive day on Tuesday that led to large-scale displacement intended to turn the resistance popular base against it. And the response from many from all over the country, meaning in Lebanon, was actually one of solidarity, which is amazing because what we're talking about is like Christians up in the north opening up their churches wide open to welcome people that are coming in from the south, fleeing from the south, this bombardment of civilians. And also the Lebanese are relearning the lessons in unity in these trying times. And I say relearning because also in 2006, when Israel invaded Lebanon, there was a solidarity, cross-sectarian, cross-religious solidarity. The Israelis had carried out an absurd number of airstrikes, about 1,000 plus, claiming to destroy the Lebanese resistance arsenal, but the real target were civilians, which they know is a weak point for the Lebanese resistance, who, by the way, history will tell the story, but it won't tell it in the fog of war. The history will tell the following story, that Hamas and Hezbollah have only been targeting military targets. The Israel has, for the vast majority, over 90% of its targets have been civilian. So who's the terrorist in this equation? Of course, in the minds of 1984-minded doublespeak representatives, the Lebanese and the Palestinians are the terrorists in this, and that's why they keep giving them weapons. And feeding them. In the meantime, we have this performative rhetoric by Kamala Harris and Biden that there's been too much death. In the meantime, they're loading the gun for the Israelis. In essence, Israel has always been a military base for the US Empire, which is actually dying right now, which is besieged right now, even though the Western nations are supplying everything, are going after the Palestinians and the Lebanese with everything they got. They're still losing they're losing their reputation. Not only is Israel has become a pariah state unmistakably, and you can't unring that bell, but the US, of course, it's clear it dropped its mask. A huge testament to the resilience and the courage of the Lebanese people. I want to assure you that Israel has failed to produce total anarchy and chaos in Gaza, while the social fabric shreds more and more every day. The level, for example, to take the example of the Palestinians supporting one another through this, has been sustained, and Palestine and Gaza is much worse and of course conditioned than Lebanon. The other thing is that my own village has gotten its share of carnage. About four strikes in the middle of the village trying to kill civilians again, and one near the school. Of course, a favorite target of the Israelis are schools. And it's unprecedented. No, this is proved to be, of course, I repeat again, and I repeat it in every show, the most immoral army. And this is the most immoral Congress and the most immoral presidency that we've had. Yes, for those of you who are saying, but Trump, no, it's even worse. It's even worse. Biden killed over 100,000. That's on him. He killed 100,000 civilians. Those are his bombs, his 2,000 bombs dropped on residential areas. I don't have any polite language, so I won't drop F-bombs here, but man, the hatred I feel for him and Kamala Harris, one of the fakest people, the totem of identity politics with their performative baloney. We're not buying it. I would encourage everybody to vote third party as a protest, and I hope they fail. Not, and that's not in support for Trump. I'll fight Trump as hard as I'm fighting Biden and Kamala. And I want to remind you that in 1982, when Israel was doing this to Lebanon, by the way, Ronald Reagan called Menachem Begin, who was the prime minister of Israel at the time, and says, "You're committing a Holocaust. What they were doing is what they're doing now," right? And he called it a Holocaust. Ronald Reagan did. And later, Begin, of course, in the same day, He shut it down. He shut down that attack because that's the kind of power. If Biden wanted to shut this down, he would have shut it down. But here's the interesting part, and I've mentioned this story before, and it's unbelievable to people. But later, Menachem Begin said that, by the way, there was a strapping young senator that wanted to disagreed with Reagan and said we should go all out and kill all, kill civilians in the process, women, indicating that, that means killing more civilians, women and children included. That strapping young senator was your beloved Biden, by the way. He wanted to go further than Reagan. He is a racist. He thinks of Arabs as subhuman, and so does Kamala Harris. That's right. Kamala Harris thinks of Arab subhuman. Otherwise, she wouldn't agree to this kind of massacre of children, dismembering of children, the raping of prisoners, Palestinian prisoners, and this travesty. But having said all that, welcome Israel to a ground war. I would love to see that. I would love to see that. And so would the Lebanese resistance, would love to see a ground war. And you'll see what cowards they are, how inefficient they are at real war against another military. For 11 months and over 11 months, they haven't been able to even beat the barefooted Palestinian resistance that are hiding in tunnels. What do you think they're going to do against Hezbollah, who has hundreds of thousands of fighters and who has ballistic missiles? What do you think they're going to do? So we welcome Israel to come and do a ground invasion of Lebanon because we'll show them what we showed them in 2006. With that, I'd like to go to our first segment, which is an interview with Dr. Finkelstein by Glenn Greenwald about the just what I was talking about just now.
What I guess surprised me was that about 6 weeks ago, it was being said as though it was a fait accompli that Iran was going to retaliate against Israel, and this time for real, not with its full force, but in a way that would actually make an impact, unlike the fake retaliation they did after the Damascus bombing. And yet that retaliation never came. And even now, with a lot of missiles, these vaunted Hezbollah missiles being shot into Israel, it's doing a little damage to some buildings, but I think there hasn't even been a single Israeli casualty yet. Is the force capability and the power, the military power of Iran and Hezbollah really as formidable as we've been hearing, or do they have real fear about retaliating in a way that they might want to do?
I have to always enter the caveat that I am not a military historian. Frankly, military matters don't very much interest me. But having said that, I have to make some comment on the subject since it's so obviously germane to the situation now. On the case of Iran, Iran is a very conservative country. And at the risk of making generalizations which sound a little bit too abstract, there's a very different way in which countries like Iran, which have a rich civilization spanning thousands of years, or China and countries in the West, the Iranians and the Chinese, having this civilizational heritage, they tend to be much more long-term in their thinking. And long-term also means a lot more patient. And so they don't feel the kinds of needs for, if we can use the expression, the same kinds of needs for instant gratification that Westerners tend to have. So Iran is confident that they will prevail because of their civilization, because of the sheer demographic weight, the geographic weight of their country, that they will prevail in the long term. And that basically means they slowly move their chess pieces on the board. I forgot the expression that's used. It's called something like a ring of fire, but I could be using the wrong expression. that they will surround Israel with various, the expression is, you can call it proxies, collaborators, allies, whichever term you want, and slowly but surely build up a force sufficient to, I'll use the term not in the literal sense, but in the metaphorical sense of to extinguish Israel. And so they've always been very slow to react for those reasons, and also just prudence. It's just not, there's no necessity to act right now. On the other hand, Israel is perfectly aware of that strategy. They talk about it. And so they feel they have to act now in order to disable that ring that's being built up around them. And so now Iran, just like in the, just like after the Gulf War, Iran knows if Hezbollah falls, they fall. There's no question about that. The only thing that stopped the attack in Iran was that Iraq turned into a disaster. Otherwise, Iran would have been attacked by Cheney and Rumsfeld. That was very clear at the time. So Iran recognizes now it's a moment of reckoning for it. There's a real problem for them because they're the third in line, Gaza, Hezbollah, Iran. If you were to ask me about the issue of military capabilities, my guess is as follows. Number one, very unusual for Hezbollah and for its leader, Saeed Nasrallah, whose speeches I always follow closely because they are in many ways quite educational. They're quite instructive. In his last few speeches, unusual for him, very unusual. He is very frank in his speeches. In the last speech he said, number one, he said, Israel has the technological edge. It's very unusual for an Arab leader, especially a proud Arab leader like Nasrallah, to frankly say they're ahead of us. Israel has the technological edge. And number two, he said that we did suffer a major blow with the penetration of our intelligence. He was very frank about that. So that, to me, is not unusual for him. He is instructive, and instructive because he is a frank, he's probably by far the frankest and most impressive political leader on the world stage. But what was surprising was almost to the point of a plea, he kept saying, we will stop the retaliation if you agree to a ceasefire in Gaza. We will stop the retaliation if you agree to a ceasefire in Gaza. And it was almost, as I said, it almost, I don't want to offend him, but it almost came out as a plea. We don't want this war. So on the one hand, when you talk about the limited damage, it may be that they're desperately looking for, what's the expression, an exit ramp? They're looking for an exit ramp. I don't believe it's possible for the reasons I've already explained. But there's a second aspect to it. It's very easy to understand what their strategy is, because Israel wins hands down in the air assault. No question about that. There's no state in the Middle East that can compete with the Israeli Air Force. However, Israel loses hands down in a ground invasion. And Israel dreads a ground invasion for the very simple reason that, believe it or not, Israelis don't want to die. They like to kill. It's fun to kill Arabs. It's more fun than shooting fish in a barrel. They are positively exhilarated and euphoric at the prospect of killing Arabs, including children. They like to shoot children in the skull, as was fairly common, according to physicians who served in the hospitals in Gaza the past year. They said children came in without any shrapnel on their body, just bullets to their head. And during the Great March of Return in 2018, as the UN report, an exhaustive 250-page single-spaced report, said, Israel targeted children, and in particular, when it didn't kill them, because killing too many unarmed children doesn't fly too well in the press to the extent that it's covered, they targeted their kneecaps and below their kneecaps to inflict what are called life-changing injuries. In any event, Israelis like to kill Arabs, humiliate Arabs, degrade Arabs, torture Arabs, but it doesn't like to fight them. In particular, they don't want to fight the party of God. Nasrallah said in a speech a couple of months ago that there are over 100,000 militants now in Hezbollah. I can't say with any certainty whether that figure is accurate, but obviously, were it true, it's a very large number. So what Israel does is it goes in and it annihilates, it decimates, it pulverizes, but it doesn't launch the ground invasion. If you recall, when October 7th, they started massing troops on the border the day after, beginning October 8th. But if you recall, they didn't actually launch the ground invasion until October 27th, because they needed 2 weeks, closer to 3 weeks, to totally decimate everything in front of them, to turn it all, to reduce it all to dust, so there would be no resistance. If you look at the actual numbers, and in case you haven't noticed, Israel never gives out its casualty figures the past year. How many soldiers were killed? You couldn't find that anywhere. They did say a couple of weeks ago that we have now had more soldiers killed in the past 10 months, as were killed on October 7th. Now, on October 7th, 313 Israeli soldiers were killed. The estimates are 313 soldiers and the rest civilians, about 800 civilians. Well, that would mean, if you do very simple math, that would mean less than one Israeli, about one Israeli was killed every day. One Israeli was killed every day. There was no war in, there was no ground war in Gaza. There was an aerial annihilation in Gaza. So Israel's hoping it can knock out Lebanon by air. The Hezbollah strategy, it's perfectly obvious. They will keep shooting rockets at Israel. However, they're not going to let out a huge blitz. Every time Israel declares victory over Hezbollah, they will fire more rockets. Israel will then inflict more aerial destruction, declare victory, and then Hezbollah will fire more rockets in order to make the situation politically untenable for Israel, and they'll have to launch the ground invasion. Now, if you listen to Nasrallah's last speech, he said, literally, he said, please invade. Please invade. We welcome the invasion, which is true. If it's 100,000 or if it's 75,000, the party of God longs for, yearns for that invasion, so they can finally settle the score with that satanic state, man to man, in hand combat. So the Israelis dread the land war. Hezbollah longs for it, and the only way it can force the land war is to keep its rockets and missiles in reserve and deny Netanyahu the chance to declare victory. That's what happened in 2006. Israel amassed the troops on its border with Lebanon, and it wasn't until 72 hours before, it was 33 days, that war. It wasn't until 72 hours before the war was over that the troops entered Lebanon, the Israeli troops. And already Condoleezza Rice had gotten a UN resolution through ending the war, because Israel begged the US, get that resolution, because we don't want the land invasion. It will be a disaster. And of that, speaking as a complete military know-nothing, speaking as a complete military ignoramus, I would say with 100% certainty, it will be, if it comes to pass, it will be a catastrophe for the state of Israel, because those people have no fear, no dread of giving their lives to finally settling the score with that monstrous state that has inflicted so much death and destruction, agony and anguish, with all the haughtiness and arrogance of the Übermenschen, just as the Soviet Red Army inflicted those final wounds on those Nazi Übermenschen that had invaded their country. It was very ugly for Germany at the end of the war. As you know, there was the mass rapes of German women. The Red Army was going to settle the score with those monsters who had murdered 30 million of their people. And it's the same thing with the Party of God. So the question is, will Israel, how much death and destruction it will inflict from the air? And secondly, whether they will be forced, because they will deny Prime Minister Netanyahu the ability to declare victory. I should note, in the 2006 war, Hezbollah, on the very last day, on the 33rd day, fired more missiles and rockets than in any other day in that 33-day war. I think, you can correct me, I think it was 10,000. It wanted to transmit the message, you lost. And I think they're going to do the same thing this time. They will hold back. That's my guess.
Thanks for watching this clip from System Update, our live show that airs every Monday through Friday at 7 p.m. Eastern, exclusively on Rumble. You can catch the full nightly shows live or view the backlog of episodes for free on our Rumble page. You can also find full episodes the morning after they air across all major podcasting platforms, including Spotify and Apple. All the information you need is linked below. We hope to see you there.
Basically an interview between Glenn Greenwald and Dr. Finkelstein on what's happening now, and I, you know, the especially with regard to Lebanon and what's happening in Lebanon. You know, for those of you who are not familiar with Dr. Finkelstein, he's been studying the region for decades, all his life, and had given up pursuing the Palestinian issue because of demoralization. But when he watched what happened in the aftermath of the October 7 preemptive attack, I call it, it's not an attack because it's a preemptive attack, that was due to the threats by this psychopathic new government formed by Netanyahu, that they're gonna end all Palestinians. They're gonna, you know, there were attempts for the whole year leading up to October 7th. There was, not to mention the decades since 1948, but at least for the last year, there's been mass demonstrations calling for the extermination of Palestinians, and that's all on view. It's not a hidden, it's not like hidden footage. Let's see here. Before the next segment, which will address the same issue, I wanted to talk about, and this is basically an interview with Ghadi Francis, that is an expert on what's happening, and also the other guest is Lo Ki, and they're talking about basically what is happening in Lebanon and why, you know, of course, what's being reported is erroneous. I want to, you know, say one thing is that these ridiculous sorties that Israel did in these 2 days are continuing to attack civilian targets today. These were like, now they're in excess, of course, of 1,000 sorties, which claimed to have destroyed 20 years of work by the Lebanese resistance, were shown to be a lie, because how otherwise, because there was an immediate retaliation by the Lebanese resistance to them to prove that nothing in terms of their capacity to fight has been diminished. And you know, the Lebanese resistance knows that Israel can get at them, so that's why they're taking the population as hostage and killing them, because they know that's the weak point for the Lebanese resistance, which targets, again, military targets, while Israel targets civilian targets. That happened in 2006, and that's happening also now. But all is to say is that places as far south as Rafah, Haifa, and south of Haifa, and even in the vicinity of Tel Aviv, have been hit by the Lebanese resistance. And the port of Eilat has been even hit just now. And the Iron Dome has failed in all these three occasions. So nothing of this capacity has really, nothing of the capacity of the Lebanese resistance has been diminished. The hope is not going to be the United Nations, which is saying all the right things, but nobody's listening. The hope is not going to be with Kamala Harris, who will supply more weapons and who's married to a Zionist and is a Zionist herself. The hope is not going to be with AOC, who betrayed us. The hope is going to be in, you know, whether you like it or not, is whether the Lebanese resistance and the Palestinian resistance manage to cause enough damage for this monster called the IDF for it to retreat and acknowledge its loss. So Their approach, meaning the Israelis, is very deliberate and gradual. The resistance's approach is very deliberate and gradual, and sometimes it might try some of my countrymen's patience because they want them to do more. But I tell you that what is happening is like a python squeezing the life out of its prey, and you just watch. So with that, let's go to the next segment, which is with an interview with Loki and Gadi Francis.
I wanted to first talk about, of course, the just massive airstrikes that Israel is conducting right now in Lebanon. There were reports that there were about 80 airstrikes in a 30-minute period. There's so many different reports about how many people have been killed, but women, children, so many have been killed. Some are saying 300, some are saying between 100 and 300, but it is a massive campaign. Of course, Hezbollah is striking deeper and deeper into his so-called Israeli territory as well in retaliation, but this follows up a number of escalations, including the horrific device attack, as it's being called by some, pagers and walkie-talkies and phones, even solar panels going off in Lebanon. I wanted to start with you, Khadi. Could you talk about the state of the resistance right now? I want to start from that perspective, because there have been some who are watching this who are feeling quite, I think, deflated. But there's also an element, too, where Israel has these very particular objectives, very aggressive objectives, leading what seems to be to an all-out war in Lebanon. Could you talk about the state of the resistance, given the fact that you have these so-called stated objectives, as well as just the devastation that we've seen in recent days?
Hello, Danny. Hello, Loki. It's such an honor to be speaking with you. Let me start with, because the narrative is very important when reciting and when talking about the situation and the resistance. Let me start by re-identifying this. When you have so little, you have so little to lose. When you have so much, you have a lot to lose. I know there has been strikes in Lebanon. Today was a very hard day for the Lebanese people. Thousands of people were displaced, maybe tens of thousands. Some are still stuck on the streets right now, on the road. Some were attacked by Israel when they were moving on the safe roads. Israel does these kinds of war crimes. This is a kind of war, psychological and actual war on people, to intimidate the Lebanese people, to tell them that the big war is here. We have to all lose our faith in our society. But on the other hand, we're looking at some people. Most of these people who are displaced today have been displaced from South Lebanon before. In the same day, Lebanon was able to increase the amount of displaced Israeli settlers by hundreds of thousands, and to increase geographically the mass, the places that are being hit by the Hezbollah rockets. Now we're speaking about southern Haifa. When we talk about the Israelis and their objectives, regardless of their war and their propaganda and taking Netanyahu to come and speak out audaciously to the Lebanese people that he's slaughtering, leave that propaganda aside and look at the actual objectives that the Israelis put from these attacks on Lebanon. Their target was to return the settlers back to the northern areas, to northern occupied Palestine. Well, not only did they did not deter Hezbollah's rockets, they dragged on new fresh round of rockets. Fadi 1, Fadi 2 hit inside the David airbase, David Ramat airbase, and we could all see the actual losses that Israelis suffered. And actually, another 300,000 Israelis were displaced. So Israel and Netanyahu, they are not really actually hitting their targets. This is all just a propaganda to cover up their failures. 1 year into genocide in Gaza, they still did not stop Gaza from firing rockets at Tel Aviv. 1 year into genocide in Gaza, they were able to carry on everyday war crimes. Every day they commit a new war crime, regardless if the ICJ rules every day or not. And when talking about Lebanon, I just want to tell you about, to going back to the first point of your question, what is the state of the resistance? If only we could look at the resistance in matter of facts, in the videos and in the in all the army shows and in all the actual battles in the past decades, we know that Hezbollah has a lot of rockets that still did not enter the battlefield. This is also reported by the Israeli media as well, and Israeli analysts. They know that Hezbollah did not really actually start. But when you actually start to hit below the belt, you are telling Hezbollah that there are no red lines anymore. And I think and I expect that the resistance in Lebanon, just like minutes after fire was all around South Lebanon, rockets were fired from South Lebanon to northern occupied Palestine. And I think this is going to go on like that, tit for tat. The only difference is that the Lebanese people are resilient enough, they are experienced enough, they are, that we know exactly who our enemy is, and we've seen that. But the Israelis do not know the new, fresh, updated Lebanese 2024 version. They're gonna meet it soon though.
Yeah, Loki, you wanna come in?
Well, firstly, I would like to begin by sending my salutations to Radi, to the other journalists who are performing an essential service to all of humanity. And more importantly, a salutation to the brave, powerful, steadfast, victorious people of Lebanon who drove Israel out in 2006 and who have overcome the US project for the region, which was, let's not forget, based on completely deteriorating Lebanon's ability to defend itself and to prevent Israel. Every group around the world that has stood with the Palestinians since October 7th has had a price exacted from them. And today, it is because of South Lebanon that you have had, for the first time in the history of the settler colony of Israel, what they call Hijr al-Aksiya, the opposite migration, the phenomena of Israeli settlers leaving the settler entity. It is because of South Lebanon that you have had the economic collapse of the settler society. And it is because of South Lebanon that you have hundreds of thousands of settlers driven from the north of Palestine. Now, Israel seems to take great delight in sending text messages to the phones of those in the south of Lebanon. But in this war, you have seen text messages sent to the phones of Israelis anywhere near the north of Palestine, also informing them of the danger headed their way. What all of this is the death spasms of a dying idea. And that idea is that European colonial settlers can impose their will on populations with histories and civilizations of thousands of years, that they can impose a new synthetic reality upon these populations, that they can dominate them, that they can drive them to different places at their will, at the point of a gun. But what you now see in the region is a clear line drawn between the axis of resistance and the axis of assistance. Now, the people across the region have a choice. They've been lied to for decades. They've had the most sophisticated psychological warfare aimed at them by the United States, Israel, Britain, Germany, and Canada have also played bit roles in this. They have pumped the media in these societies full of the idea that they have something to fear from the only people in the region who are willing to fight and die for the protection of it. The mist is clearing and the truth has been demystified by these circumstances. Why is it today that you have those in the axis of assistance, the Jordanian government, shooting down drones coming from Iraq to aid those in Lebanon and those in Gaza? Why is it when you have some of the poorest people in the world in Yemen who have themselves endured almost a decade of a genocidal war, which has seen the targeting of all manner of civilian infrastructure rise like a phoenix from the embers of that war to defend their brothers and sisters in Gaza? When that was taken, that step was taken to say the Red Sea is a red line, you will not pass. What happened? A land bridge was established between the UAE, Jordan, and Saudi Arabia in order to keep providing fuel, providing food, vegetables, providing all manner of assistance to the Zionist enemy. And the other question marks that have to be brought about here, when you look at the assassinations that Israel has carried out across the last few days, there are individuals there that the United States have long-term revenge with. We cannot understand the assassination of Fuad Shukr or Ibrahim Aqil as simply an Israeli move. The United States would have been involved in an intimate way. In addition to that, when an Israeli jet today had finished striking Lebanon and was fleeing from the area, where did it carry out an emergency landing? In Cyprus. Was that emergency landing on the British airbase of Akrotiri in Cyprus? It has been said before by senior Israeli military figures that Akrotiri base in Cyprus will be the heartbeat of any regional war which takes place. This is not simply Israel acting against Lebanon. This is the collective West acting against the global South. It is time for those in the global South who really have power, who at the beginning of the war on Gaza, the genocide on Gaza, took fairly honorable positions. But it seems that Israel's bullying of them is drawing them back into a deadly dance and a Faustian pact with Israel. And we say to those powers of the global South, you are the future, we respect you, but we want you to be stronger in protecting our people in Gaza and protecting our people in Lebanon. The choice is clear now for people in the region. For so long, we've said Gaza has been failed, hukumatan wa sha'ban. But now is the time where sha'ban, there needs to be a difference. On the people-to-people level, you need more efforts to destabilize and disrupt that land bridge that runs into the Zionist entity. You need more done to destabilize the relations between Egypt and Israel. It is simply untenable and unsustainable. In the future and the years and the decades to come, people will look back on what they did during this period as definitive of who they are. And I would say that in terms of our role in this country, Palestine Action will escalate operations against Israeli arms factories in this country in line with what Israel is attempting to do in Lebanon. We have 16 political prisoners in UK jails today, and we are willing to go by the hundred and by the thousands more of us into the prisons in this country if that means we lessen the load on Gaza and Lebanon. And you have to remember that for all of these days of this genocide in Gaza, what Lebanon has tried to do is lighten the load on Gaza. And today the load is lightened. It's over 300 in Lebanon today, and it's less in Gaza than it was yesterday. The region is rising and asserting its sovereignty in a way never, ever before. So while this is a moment of great pain, of great suffering, it's also a moment of great hope.
Yeah, Haradi, I want to bring you back in to talk about that sacrifice. I've heard you on other programs talk about this great sacrifice. And, you know, even the New York Times are referencing 2006, because according to even Western media, the what Israel is doing right now, according to some numbers, is saying that it's almost a quarter of what was conducted in that brutal genocidal war during that period. So could you talk about the sacrifice and how even it just like Lebanese people and the resistance have been responding even beyond the military side, the armed resistance side?
Well, if we go back, I want first of all, I want to thank Loki for the perspective he took on in talking about the region, and I want to come from there. The problem in this whole region is that the colonial powers drew these maps, and since they formed these new smaller nations in the sense of divide and conquer, but they were formed in a way to make the people and the region weaker so that a Zionist entity can come and fix itself. But Lebanon is not only in a war of solidarity with Gaza. Lebanon has direct war and conflict with the Israeli presence at the borders. Every day there are clashes. Every day the Israeli planes cross our skies, and the assassination list has always been there, whether it's in Syria or carried out in Lebanon. I just want to give for context here, Hassan al-Lais, a very great technological mind of Hezbollah, was assassinated in Beirut, and there was no war by the Mossad, by the Israelis. This is why when we go back to speaking about the assassination of Abdul Qadir, which is like Ibrahim Faqih, or Shukr, or before that Imad Mughniyi or Mustafa Badreddin, you are speaking about men that were on the list that were hunted by the Americans and the Israelis for 40 years since the 80s. So they have been martyred for 40 years. They have succeeded in tricking the Americans and surviving that list for 40 years, during which they have built a structured resistance, a structured organization, and they manufactured and designed tens of men like them. The problem with the people who speak about the resistance in Lebanon is that they are blinded by the idea that the white man always wins, that the F-35 always wins, that the Israelis and the Zionists and the people with the money always win. But in 2006, we have a precedent as Lebanese people where the Merkava did not win, where the planes did not actually win, where the Israelis did not follow any objective, and where we actually succeeded in a prisoner swap operation. So whatever they use, whether it's one quarter of the 2006 war or not, since 2006 and until today, Lebanese Hezbollah as an organization has grown in its skills, has grown in its numbers, has grown in its expertise, and the axis of resistance is tremendous. I am so proud of Lebanon today. I'm so proud of the Lebanese people and the Lebanese solidarity. I'm so proud that me as a person, I want to tell you a personal experience, Danny and Karim. In 2006, I was 17 years old. I just finished high school and the war broke out. It took us around 10 years into war to be able to communicate with a family that lived in southern suburb of Beirut, to open our home in northern Lebanon, to be able to aid them to find a safer place. Today, it took me exactly 1 hour to do so. And it took that people exactly 30 minutes to evacuate. We are so ready for this. This war, if it's not actually in the headlines and in the news, we live it every day in our homes. There is no day that we are not oppressed, or our land is not really taken, or you have some settlers trying to humiliate our people. So it is not peace over here. The price and the sacrifice is big, yes, but for the first time in history, going back to the region, you see a Syrian manufactured rocket built and fired by a Lebanese hand at a Palestinian occupied state. And simultaneously, you see an Iraqi rocket flying over Jordan, Syria, and getting into occupied Palestine. This is something that has never happened before. And this makes the new frame of the new war. The Israelis call it the Lebanon War number 3. We prefer the designation that the Palestinians took. It is the flood. And I think the people of this region have been ready enough for the past 77 years of genocide and Holocaust. This is not a fight we chose. It is a fight of existence for us.
Yeah, yeah, indeed.
For WPFW News in Washington and WBAI in New York, I'm Sue Goodwin. Here are some headlines. The Israel Defense Forces top commander, Chief of Staff Lieutenant General Herzi Halevi, told troops today that they were preparing for a ground invasion into Lebanon. In a video released by the Israeli military, Halevi said during an exercise program in northern Israel that Israeli strikes in the past few days are meant to, quote, prepare the ground for your possible entry and to continue degrading Hezbollah. Israel bombed the mountains north of Beirut earlier today, and for the first time, Hezbollah targeted Tel Aviv in a missile attack. Israel intercepted the missile, and there were no immediate reports of danger or casualties. Today's attack in Lebanon is fueling fears that Israel's assault could spread to other parts of the country. Israel's bombing campaign inside Lebanon has killed more than 560 people and injured 1,800 more since Monday, according to the Lebanese Health Ministry. And according to a statement from the United Nations today, more than 90,000 people in southern Lebanon have been displaced in the last 5 days as a result of Israeli air attacks. The U.S. is pushing for a diplomatic resolution to the conflict, trying to avoid an Israeli invasion of Lebanon and a broader war. The UN Security Council will convene an emergency meeting on Lebanon later today. In domestic news, the House is expected to hold a vote tonight on a bill that would avert a government shutdown next week. The proposed plan would fund the government at current levels until December 20th. In a move to gain support from Democrats, the spending plan promoted by House Speaker Mike Johnson does not include any part of the SAVE Act, a proposal demanded by Donald Trump that would require Americans nationwide to show proof of citizenship to register to vote. Acknowledging that this is not the spending plan Republicans would prefer, Speaker Johnson wrote in a letter to his Republican colleagues, quote, as history has taught and current polling affirms, shutting the government down less than 40 days from a fateful election would be an act of political malpractice, close quote. If the House passes the funding bill, it will move on to the Senate. Trump has publicly insisted that congressional Republicans shut down the government unless the spending plan includes the SAVE Act. Hurricane Helene is moving over the Gulf of Mexico, where the National Hurricane Center said it will intensify into a major Category 3 storm and possibly the strongest hurricane to hit the U.S. in over a year. Landfall is expected tomorrow along Florida's Gulf Coast, where people are being urged to prepare, and several counties are under evacuation orders. Helene will be the fourth hurricane to make landfall in the U.S. this year. The rapid intensification of Helene over the Gulf of Mexico raises again the potential of climate change to influence weather patterns, according to data from the nonprofit research group Climate Central. Human-caused climate change made the current record-warm waters of the Gulf of Mexico between 200 to 500 times more likely. And the Justice Department filed a civil antitrust lawsuit against Visa yesterday, accusing the company of illegally monopolizing the debit card market and therefore driving up prices for businesses and consumers. Attorney General Merrick Garland said in a statement, quote, "Merchants and banks pass along those costs to consumers either by raising prices or reducing